Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. And Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Very good. You know, last week we talked about the sanctions bill going through the Senate and, and tried to tell our viewers how bad a bill it was. But our conversation didn't do much to change the vote. It passed 97-2. Yeah. So the people really want to hit hard against the Iranians and the Russians. But I think we didn't predict anything, but I think our conversation more or less assumed, well, you know, the support is too strong. It'll probably sail right through the House. But guess what? There's a little bit of a stalemate in the House. All of a sudden, it's not moving. And they said, well, this is a parliamentary procedure. Corker said, this is just parliamentary, temporary. It doesn't mean anything. I don't happen to agree with that. I think there are other things going on, because when they want to do something, they do. One of the excuses is they said that it involves the tax code to some degree. And we in the House have to write everything on taxes. And that the Senate's not allowed to do that. Therefore, it's unconstitutional. They'll have to redo it. I think that's all an excuse. So what do you think's going on this bill? And what's going to happen?
Well, what I'd like to think is happening, if you remember last week, we told people to get in touch with their representatives and tell them to oppose this bill. So maybe that's what's happening. Hopefully there's a little bit of that. But you're right. I think it's a procedural issue. And how has this origination clause problem been resolved before? I'm sure you've probably seen it.
Well, see, the farce here is that they care about the Constitution, because it doesn't matter. But I remember an incident in at the beginning of the Reagan administration. First thing we had is we had a tax cut bill, which I voted for and everybody agreed. But what people don't remember is subsequently there were five tax increases. And during the Reagan era, there were taxes raised every year except the first and last year. But TEFRA, which came up in 1982, was at that time the biggest tax increase ever. And the whole bill was written in the Senate. And I actually participated in a lawsuit and said, hey, this is outrageous. The House did not write one single word of the bill. But what they did was they took a bill that the House sent to the Senate and they struck the whole bill, and they kept the number, and this is a House bill, and then they rewrote everything, you know, to get around this technicality, and the people, you know, they went along with this, and they passed this, but it wasn't fulfilling the requirement that the bill be written in the House of Representatives.
And that makes you wonder about the fact that this is getting some press, because probably a lot of that happened without anyone really even knowing about it.
No, and there was just a group of us afterwards thought, this is outrageous that they're doing this, and but it was, you know, the usual suspects, about 10 or 15 of us, thought this was outrageous, and it was a huge tax increase. But the point being is they don't care about the Constitution. I mean, if they did, we wouldn't be in 12 wars right now. We wouldn't be in a war in Afghanistan for 15, 16 years. So they don't care about that. So it's strictly you know a process that they're going through, and they're going to say it's constitutional or technologically, you know, the legislative process. But something else is going on. Somebody behind the scenes doesn't want this bill passed. There's a little bit of dissension in the administration. You know, we don't know exactly where Trump is. You know, he was real pro Russia, and then he becomes anti-Russia, and he has this balancing act. He has to be tough, and yet he might be behind the scenes. I think the administration expressed some interest in not getting this bill passed, and Tillerson is in that position. And maybe some of our allies now might not be too happy with more sanctions on the Russians and the Iranians.
Yeah, a little blood in the water maybe. But, you know, Tillerson, I think this is a bit of a turf war, which in this case, one of the rare times, we probably agree with what Tillerson's point is, that, you know, we're going to lose a lot of flexibility in the president's ability to make foreign policy. If you slap on these sanctions, they require, I think, a 30-day congressional review period if the president decides to lift them. But you know what I'm struck by is how weak the Republicans are, how they let the Democrats set the entire agenda. They're terrified of being seen as weak on Russia, so they lie back and let the Democrats completely railroad over them.
And they, of course, have an advantage a little bit on the media, but they set the stage. They don't do much. They do have a bully pulpit, you know, but the leadership in the Republican side, probably they're not much better off than the Democrat. But I think what I get worn out about are the reasons this much must be done. And, you know, early on in this administration, I said, it looks like Schumer's winning.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to read one of his quotes on the justification, why this has to get immediately passed, and because it's so necessary, and these Russians are so bad. I think it's fascinating to think about, you know, the progressive Democrats, and I do have some respect for some progressives because they have a principled position of less war and less intervention, and they were the progressives, you know, back when the Soviets, the communists were running Russia. Boy, I tell you, they really loved Russia.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden now the progressives are the ones who want to practically bomb Russia, and well, they do in Syria and other places. But this is what Schumer had to say, and I think it tells you a little, just an annoyance of their justification for this. And Schumer says, what has Russia concluded from all this? Putin now knows he will not suffer any consequences for disinformation campaigns, buzzing our ships and planes, threatening our European allies for cyber attacks, energy coercion, and Putin's ongoing support for Russian separatists in Ukraine. So, you know, it's all this business that there was, you know, a Russian invasion and aggression in Ukraine at the same time we were participating in a coup.
A coup. I mean, literally everything he mentioned is incorrect. A disinformation campaign, I guess he's talking about RT, but does he not realize that we also have Voice of America, we have Radio for Europe, we have all these channels that do the same thing. So, okay, if that's that. Buzzing our ships and planes is funny because just yesterday, an F-16 not only buzzed a Russian plane, but a Russian plane carrying the defense minister of Russia. I don't know if you saw the video.
Yeah, where was that located?
That was almost into Russian territory.
In the Baltic.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
So that was amazing. Threatening our European allies. Well, we're conducting military exercises literally 300 yards from Russian territory. That's not supposed to be threatening. Cyber attacks, unproven. Energy coercion. Support for Russian separatists in Ukraine. As you point out already, this is a coup that we originated that took Russian-speaking eastern Ukraine away from its traditional allies, Russia. So it's all completely bogus, but for some reason, everyone is terrified to challenge this. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and you know, I guess an important question right now, will the sanctions be put on? Because we believe that more sanctions will not help the situation. And they have a difficulty. Obviously, if the people behind the scenes and if somebody in the deep state has a reason they don't want these sanctions, you know, the deep state is just not U.S. deep state. They represent Europeans and everybody else. If they don't want this to pass and it's in their interest, which would be, you know, in a sense, more our position, they might be putting pressure on it, and know darn well if there's a vote. I assume the Democrats are eager for a vote because if they had a vote today, you know, the Russians have been painted so badly that they're the monsters that they have to be stopped, and they've created every problem we've ever had, and I think you just refuted the disagreements that they have, that we just don't agree with Schumer's assessment.
And I think the Europeans, you know, might be getting a little annoyed finally, because these sanctions are out of the blue. They're for something that happened in 2014, for which there were already sanctions. And the German and Austrian foreign ministers reacted very sharply to the Senate's passage of this bill. Here's a German foreign minister. Europe's energy supply is a matter for Europe, not for the United States of America. You know, because part of these sanctions would affect the construction of pipelines going from Russia into Central Europe, where they need this gas.
That's good news, I think, because the argument is that we used, the founders used, and common sense tells you that the more you invest in trade, the less likely you are to fight. And I think since we've traded with China, you know, even with our disagreements, we're less likely, even though some people are starting to push with the conflict there, we're less likely to have this conflict. That's why I was surprised that it went so far over the Ukraine, that the Europeans, here they're receiving this energy from Russia that they went so far on the coup and this blaming Russia for what was going on, and here they were participating in it. But maybe there is more concern, which means that economic concern some kind can be, prevail over this effort to try to intimidate, a country like Russia. So I think that may well be good news, because who's going to suffer if things get out of hand, whether it's in the Middle East or in the Ukraine or wherever? It's the Europeans, the Eastern Europeans. And all we do is we send in more missiles and antagonize and buzz the Russian planes on their borders. It just doesn't make any sense to do this. There's not any benefit to those people in Europe. And maybe they're waking up to this, and this would be great, because they'll say, hey, why are we doing it? Even the South Koreans are excited of us putting more missiles, on the border down there, and yet we're talking about putting more missiles in there and more ships and all this. And they know that within a short distance, really, from North Korea into Seoul, it's a short distance. And they might, I don't think they have a nuclear weapon that do, but they have a ton of ordinary weapons, and they could destroy Seoul in no time at all. So I think that's why they're wising up, and maybe the Europeans are coming at this point. So I think that I've always maintained that all of a sudden our neocons aren't going to fade away. They're pretty powerful, but maybe the willingness that you say the Republicans don't stand up to it, maybe the Europeans will eventually wake up. They're suffering more from our wars, with migration problems. Yeah. And maybe they'll just put this together. Why do we always go along with this? We really didn't send the troops over there and ask the Americans to help us. The Americans go over there and they start and they say, come along to the British and the French, come along and join us in our adventure. And then they get blamed. So this might be a very significant change in events, which would be logical for them to do it, but it remains to be seen.
And excuse me, even the Poles, who are traditionally extremely anti-Russia, they're conflicted between ideological anti-Russian feelings and the pool of economics, because, scuttling the Nord Stream pipeline is going to affect Poland's collection of transshipment fees, and those can get into some big bucks. So the Poles are trying to balance, hold on, we need this money.
Well, this is good, and that's back to the argument that you want as many economic transactions as possible, and you want people to suffer if they break off relationships. And all countries are imperfect. And when we condemn and say to a country, well, we can't do this because you don't protect human rights, and this sort of thing. Well, nobody wants to look at what we have done or are doing in our secret prisons and torture and this sort of thing. And when we blame Russia for influencing and talking, but the 100 elections that we've been involved in since this World War II, American people don't get to hear about that. You mean we've actually been involved, in determining elections? So that's the information that needs to get out. But unfortunately, the process is still very dangerous.
I had two quick closers, if that's okay.
Okay,
the first one
good.
Is, on the off chance we might have affected people, don't forget to contact your congressman and tell him you don't want these sanctions. The other one I was just going to say, I think you were rightly concerned about Trump being an authoritarian personality. But what I'm struck by now is what a paper tiger he is. This whole thing could have been headed off if he had been an assertive president, if he had come in and said, I was elected to change our policy toward Russia, and by gum, I'm going to do it, and here's what steps I'm going to take. The American people voted for this. Instead of this sort of slinking around, afraid, and it does, he could have, by being Trump, he probably could have solved this problem.
I think that's an important point. And, you know, there's always a lot of talk about somebody being a strong president or a weak president. And it probably depends on what you're defending. You know, if you want to challenge the status quo and you don't want to go to war, generally that person is considered a weak president. He doesn't want to go out and exert ourselves and show our military strength. And yet if the majority of the people or the majority of a Congress is against an individual, but he stands up against him, I think that shows strength. And I think that is more or less the strength that you'd like to see Trump express, to do the right thing. And when he's right, if he wants to be friends with Russia, and that's you know, really what he wants, he should use it as a bully pulpit and tell us why we should be changing that policy instead of rolling over and then behind the scenes and trying to appease both sides. Well, I have to be tough for my base because they don't like Russia, but I have to be moderate because we do want to continue these economic position. But if you have a precise philosophy that says the more you trade, the better it is, the more the travel, the more you get to know people, the greater the chance of peace and prosperity for everyone, then you know exactly what to do. The problem I see is that not too many take the absolute position at the present time of saying, yes, we are the dictators of the world and we are going to dominate and assume control of every country in the world, and that is our philosophic goal, absolute dictatorship of the world. The other side, which is our side, is we believe in non-intervention and that we shouldn't send troops into other places, even with their imperfections and our imperfection. What they have done, and they do it in economics, is this in-between interventionism. The realists, they come in and they say, on the one hand, we can do this, but on the other hand, we shouldn't do this, and there's never anything precise. They don't have a basic principle other than interfering, and then they get in and argue who gets to dictate this wishy-washy position, and I think that's what's going on. So that's why I'm a strong believer in a strong philosophy, also recognizing that you know, those of us who believe in perfect liberty know darn well we'll never see perfect liberty, but the perfect dictatorship of the world, they're not going to see that either. But you need to know where we stand. But once you go to the middle, you give up half of your argument to the authoritarians who want to rule the world. That's why I think it's good to have a strong philosophic belief that in individual liberty and free trade, that people will be better off. Our goal should be peace and prosperity. That is what we work for here at the Liberty Report. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.